Spring is in full swing, and summer is just around the corner. A great time for a beach getaway at the Oceanfront Boardwalk Plaza Hotel in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. Enjoy the best of oceanfront accommodations and amazing dining right on the beach, both with great views of the ocean and boardwalk. Enjoy a soak in the heated indoor spa pool, or book the adults-only concierge level and relax in the rooftop hot tubs. Book online at BoardwalkPlaza.com or call 800-333-333 Beach. Thanks to the Boardwalk Plaza for being the Bridge Podcast Network sponsor.
Welcome to another episode of Together, part of the Bridge Podcast Network. Together, hosted by author, pastor, and communicator Jack Eason, will equip us in overcoming loneliness. We'll learn to identify what gets in the way of real community, how to develop and deepen true friendships, and discover a place of true belonging. Now, here is the host of Together, Jack Eason.
Well, hey, folks, thanks for joining me today. If you're watching or if you are listening to the podcast, thank you. You know, the last several months we have been talking about the issue of loneliness, and that is an issue that our special guest today has studied a lot and studied the psychology and neuroscience behind. And actually, she and the study that she was a part of were, a couple of times mentioned as a source in the Loneliness Solution that comes out here in a few weeks, because there's just so much content, great content in there. And so I just want to welcome Julianne Holt-Lundstad. She's a professor of psychology and neuroscience at Brigham Young University. Hey, thanks for spending some time with us today.
Thanks. My pleasure.
So grateful that you're here. And a lot of people may not know this, but and one of the things I found really intriguing in doing research for this book originally, the book that I had thought I was going to write was about community and we're better together. And then I started realizing, well, we're actually not together. we might be physically together, but we're still, there's this epidemic of loneliness. And one of the things that really intrigued me that you were, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think you were a trailblazer. You really were because the study that I noticed, I think you were the first U.S. researcher to publish a large-scale study about how loneliness or having a poor support structure in your life contributed to morbidity. So you've discovered, I guess, loneliness actually has a physical effect. Tell a little bit about that and your discovery from that initial study that you did.
So I wish I was the first, but I'm not.
Okay.
But I think what my publication did do is summarize what had been done previously. So there are studies that date back to, I think the first one is around maybe 1979, which was a large-scale epidemiological study. That showed that people who were more socially integrated lived longer, and those who were more socially isolated had earlier death. And so by about 1988, there was a survey that had, a paper that summarized five studies. And so by the time I was, starting my career, I had really based all of my research on that, but yet no one else besides, me and maybe a handful of other academics who do similar work really noticed or even recognized that relationships might impact physical health. And so that led me to gather all of the available data that existed worldwide to that point. And so what I did was analyze and combine all that data. And that's what we published, was a combined analysis of that. And so that, I think, part of the reason that perhaps that was impactful is because it really was unnoticed until that point. I hope it's on people's radar now, but we certainly have a long way to go.
Yeah. Well, some of you may be watching this. I'm hoping post-COVID-19, but while Julianne and I are talking, we're in the midst of that. And I think maybe for a lot of people who find themselves isolated during this time, it's caused kind of a renewed attention to your study and other studies. Like, why do you think, even pre-virus stuff, why do you think people did not recognize the connection that you're talking about? Because to me, when I read some of your study and other things for this book, I was just kind of, I had several aha moments going, well, this is kind of obvious now that I'm seeing it. Why is it not more prevalent for just the general public?
I think we, even during COVID, right? I think we recognize that it might impact our emotional well-being, maybe even our psychological well-being. But very few people recognize what a powerful effect that it has on not only our emotions, but our body, that in turn leads to risk for a variety of chronic illnesses, including earlier death. And I think it's because it's viewed as something that's more emotional. And I think it also probably, ties back to Western medicine where, the mind and body are viewed as very separate and distinct. And in reality, we've shown across lots of studies how this can impact a variety of pathways and to health and medical outcomes. Mm.
You define, and I think I understand why now that I've given this some study, but for those maybe who would not connect these words, or maybe they do connect these words, you differentiate between what were the things that I was reading? Loneliness and isolation. In your study, how have you seen those be different or related?
Yeah. So, I mean, people use the terms interchangeably all the time. And of course they are related, but they are distinct. So let me just maybe describe how these are defined and how they are distinct. So, social isolation is thought to be more objective, whereas loneliness is thought to be a little bit more subjective. So isolation is defined as having few or infrequent social contact, whereas loneliness is more of this subjective feeling. So whereas social isolation is more objectively being alone, loneliness is more the subjective feeling alone. So it's often described as the discrepancy between one's actual and desired level of social connection. And so you can see how if you are alone, you're more likely to feel alone. So that, that of course they're related, but we can certainly be alone, but not feel lonely. Many times people can take great pleasure in those moments alone and a sense of solitude. And in fact, I spoke to one person during this COVID pandemic, and they were saying what I wouldn't give for 5 minutes alone, because quarantine with dogs and babies and partners, sometimes we can be alone and not feel lonely, but also there are times when we can still be around others and still feel profoundly lonely. So many people have used the term, alone in a crowd, or maybe have had times where they're at a party or at a social gathering and yet still felt profoundly lonely. And so I think these descriptions help illustrate how they, while they can co-occur, they don't always co-occur. And so it's important to help distinguish when those may differ.
You love the people in your life, but sometimes you just don't understand each other. Wouldn't it be great if there was a tool to help you do that?
The Enneagram is a great tool to inspire better connections with others, ourselves, and God. It's about learning what motivates us or how we and others see the world. Hi, I'm Ben.
And I'm Kim. Join us on the journey to better relationships utilizing the Enneagram.
Check out our podcast, If You Really Knew Me, and subscribe today.
Do you think there are some personality characteristics that some of us may have that maybe push us more towards feeling lonely than others?
It's interesting because in some of my research, we have not found differences based on that. However, I think there is this perception that perhaps introverts may be just fine being alone and not feel lonely. But because I've asked this question so many times, I looked to see if others had researched this and did come across some research that showed that actually, while loneliness can occur among extroverts and introverts, that it was actually higher among introverts, which was a little bit surprising. So it wasn't my research, but it does seem to suggest that doesn't necessarily fit that stereotype that we might have.
Right. I was wondering because I know some folks, and I fortunately or unfortunately fall into this category myself sometimes of being so independent that, But I'm still like community. I'm very a people person, but I think sometimes my independent spirit sometimes prevents me from connecting the way it should. And I was reading, and I hope I'm getting this story right from memory, but I know for you, kind of the study of all this hit home with you and your husband. I think it was 2010, 11, if I'm remembering. With your husband finding out, and thankfully he recovered through stage 4 cancer. Am I remembering correctly?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, you got through that, and I know there are a lot of people watching who have had all kinds of challenges in their lives and sometimes think, wow, I wish I had community, but I find myself at this time lonely. What did you discover through that personal experience and with just your studies that could be a help to someone, maybe some tips? To help them overcome this loneliness that seems to be an epidemic in our world?
I think one of the things that surprised me that I learned through that experience is just how hard it is to not only ask for help, but to accept help from others. And so, one of the ways in which our relationships can impact health is through social support, whether it's emotional support or tangible support, informational support. But having others that we can count on, right, can make a huge difference in how we respond. I mean, think about even now going through COVID and the extent to which you know that you can count on other people, even if you don't have to draw on that, can make a huge difference in your body, your physiological response, your psychological response. But what I found during that is even though I knew all this, right, and I had people offering, help, and I knew I needed help. I had 2 young kids and my husband in the hospital but I didn't want to be a burden to other people. I was so afraid that if I, and knowing how overwhelmed I was, I think there's this huge norm of how could I ever repay that? I will then just basically be a burden on other people. And it's unfortunate because, and thankfully I had a very good friend who talked some sense into me, who just said to me, everyone around you who loves you and cares for you is feeling helpless. And this is our way of feeling like we're helping and you're not letting us.
Yeah.
Wow. And so it was like a huge eye opener of course. Right. And now, you know, when I talk to other people who are going through struggles, it's, you know, when people offer to help, they really want to help. It's, and it helps them too. And in fact, research has shown that the person who is providing support, actually that provision of support actually helps even more than receiving support. I think, you know, being a source of support for others, not only helps them, but it can help you too. And so, you know, getting through this or whatever crisis you might be going through, looking for opportunities to help people and accepting help when you need it, can go a long way.
Do you think that the reason that is difficult, because the way you describe what you went through, I've been similar in my thinking of just, I don't want to be a bother to the other people. Do you think that is a Western concept? Are we kind of programmed, so to speak? I mean that, use that term loosely, just with culture of North America to think that way, because I've been to, you know, other countries, third world, Haiti, Dominican, you know, Africa, Malawi, Africa. And the saying, it takes a village, they actually believe it takes a village. And we say that sometimes in our culture, but I wonder if we actually are missing some of the ways, like you just described. Gratefully, you had a friend who said, hey, let us be part of your village. Is that how our mindset just kind of wired and geared wrong because of the culture that we live in, maybe?
I mean, we definitely have, we live in a very independent society where we value our independence. And, you know, I mean, it's part of our culture. You know, our individual freedoms are such a part of the American, you know, ideal, and individual liberties. It's all about the individual, right? And, and we have this norm that, to be, you know, when you grow up, you should become independent, right? and self-sufficient, and you know, other countries, to a greater extent, have this sense of interdependence. And it's not so much that you're, you know, constantly relying on others as much as, you know, society, you know, all plays a role, and a community, or a village, right? And that everyone looks out for everyone else. And that growing up is being someone for whom others can rely upon, right? I think to a certain extent that is a barrier because of that norm of independence that we value so much, you know, can sometimes be to our own detriment.
Yeah. What are you seeing? And I know I'm gonna let you go here in a minute because I've kept you longer than I thought, but this is a great conversation. What are you seeing among the younger people, teenagers and millennials and Gen Z? You know, some of the studies that I came across were talking about this generation is the most seemingly connected with all of the devices, and yet the loneliest generation on the planet. Are you seeing those same things in your studies? I know I've seen some studies talk about the elderly who maybe lose a life partner, and so there's kind of an obvious reason they would be lonely. But is there an age group that loneliness seems to kind of hover over, or what?
Yeah. First of all, I should say, loneliness affects people of all ages. And so it can affect, you know, anyone at any age, any gender, any economic background, but it tends to be higher among certain groups, right? So I don't want anyone to just assume based on a certain demographic that they do or, you know, are or are not lonely, right? But the prevalence rates, as you mentioned, are highest among younger adults, younger teens. So even prior to COVID-19, Gen Z has been shown the highest prevalence. And this has been across a couple of different surveys, not only the United States, but some out of the UK and Europe, and some surveys, international surveys, including the US and other countries, are showing that this is true during COVID too. Many wondered whether because Gen Z and those who are younger may be more tech savvy, that might be associated with better coping, you know, as we're having to be more distant during this pandemic. Would those tech savvy skills help with that? And what the surveys are showing is that in fact the highest prevalence rates are still among them, and the greatest increase has been among Gen Z as well. And so, you know, one of the things that this also raises is what some of the longer term effects may be for this generation. Because we're seeing major disruptions of this in life transitions. And one of the things that prior research has shown is that these life transitions, such as retirement, transition to parenthood, you know, all of these things, put people at increased risk. And, you know, for Gen Z, we're seeing, you know, students, you know, not being able to go to their graduation. You know, to what extent is this having an effect where, you know, that normal transition from leaving home and going off to college, or maybe, you know, living away from home for the first time may not happen because, you know, most universities are going to online education, you know, finding a new job during this time. Those life transitions are severely disrupted. And so, you know, this is a generation that we need to be particularly attentive to, and making sure that, you know, we can help mitigate some of those risks.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you said that, because I have a big heart for this generation and for young people. And I wonder, I have my own thoughts, but I would ask you just one quick final question here. What do you think? And we're not going to get the only, you know, formula or great answer, you know, but there are, I think, some things that age group and all of us can do to help us with loneliness. What are some things that you would suggest if a Gen Z person is listening or watching that's struggling with feeling lonely? What are some things that they should do? Because I think you're right. Those transitions, I'm talking to a lot of college presidents just in asking questions for this book. And they just said, they've told me there's two transitions, obviously those coming into college, you know, it's a new city, maybe it's a new school, it's a new schedule, it's new friends. And then leaving, a transition to the real world. Those are drastic and very important things for that age group. What are some tips they should be thinking about that can help be maybe some solutions to this whole loneliness deal?
Yeah, I mean, part of the reasons why those are so kind of trigger points for potential risk is that those life transitions often are a disruption in your social network. So you're kind of, if you're moving to a new location, your social network, your social supports, you may have to reestablish those wherever you transition to. And so that can be really difficult. So one of the things that may be helpful in that transition is, one is to still try to maintain and nurture existing support networks. So whether that's parents, friends, family, really trying to maintain those relationships may help you through that transition. And then the other is going to be trying to make new connections. And, you know, that's always difficult. But one of the things that we find is that, you know, again, with this being the source of support for others, that reaching out to others, looking for others who might need a friend, right? Mm-hmm. Not only does it help them, but it also puts yourself in a state where you don't feel as vulnerable, right? Sometimes you can feel really vulnerable putting yourself out there, like trying to make a friend. But if you approach it in the sense of, you know, I bet this person could use a friend, that can sometimes help remove some of those barriers that can be really difficult to get over. And so putting yourself out there to help us create some of those new friendships and making the effort. And then I guess the last thing is just recognizing that new relationships take time to develop. You know, I think sometimes we have this misperception, you know, maybe it's on television or movies that, you know, you're going to be instantly best friends. And, you know, that rarely happens. It takes time to go from being a stranger to an acquaintance, and more time from being an acquaintance to a friend, and even more time from being a friend to a best friend, right? And so, you know, having realistic expectations can also help ease in that transition in these times, and just looking out for others will hopefully help all involved, right?
Yeah, you're right. That's such good advice, and it seems like the patience level on that age group, and even on my age group, sometimes with what you're saying is, I don't want to give it the effort. And you know, I talked to many of those in that age group. Well, I tried that, and it's just I gave up. And it's like, you know, if you go to if you're hungry and you go to a restaurant and it's not what you wanted, you don't just quit eating. I mean, you keep trying, you keep doing that. And I think that's so important.
Or it's like going to the gym and expecting to be super fit after one time.
that's a great analogy too. Don't we wish that worked that way? Oh my goodness. Yep. I am so grateful for your time. If somebody wanted to reach out to you and follow up maybe on a question we didn't answer, is that okay? And if so, what's the best way for them to connect with you, social media or email?
So I'm on Twitter at @JBoltLundstad, and you can also find me, I'm like looking up my online, julianneboltlundstad.byu.edu.
Okay, easy enough. We'll make sure we put that information when we post that on the website. And again, grateful for your time. Thanks for your emphasis on this issue and your research, and for your time today. I'm grateful. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Together on the Bridge Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss a beat. Share your thoughts and questions about this episode by emailing podcast@wearethebridge.org. You can find other great podcasts by heading over to the Listen tab at wearethebridge.org/podcast.